I started to title this message The Upside Down Kingdom, and then I thought, no, it's we that are upside down. It's not the kingdom that's upside down, it's right side up. Our brains don't always work right. Did you know that? Proverbs 14:12 says, there's a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death. You don't see things right side up all the time. Why is that? Well, the short answer is sin. Sin has affected the way we process things, the way we see the world. Because of the breach in our relationship with the Father, we don't always see the things the way He sees them. Romans 1:21 says, when people, they knew God, but they didn't glorify Him as God or give thanks to Him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened, and they claimed to be wise, but they became fools. So our ability to see reality correctly is tied to our intimacy with the Father. It's tied to worship. It's tied to thanksgiving. It's tied to that vital connection with Him. Okay? So I want to talk about a couple of applications of this principle about getting our heads reoriented as we look at the way He thinks, which is different than the way we think quite often. Dr. Larry Crabb is a Christian psychologist, teaches, I think, Colorado University, Colorado Christian, has written a number of books. And he says that as people, a lot of our actions are driven by two basic emotional needs or drives. One is our drive for significance. Does my life matter? Does it have any impact? Is the world better or is it at least different because I'm here? I want to know that I make a difference, right? And the other need is security. Am I cared for? Am I loved? Are my relational needs going to be met? So would you agree with me that those are pretty fundamental to who we are as people? Those are kind of basic psychic emotional drives that we have. The problem is how we try to get those met and the strategies that we use. And Dr. Crabb talks about, you know, he goes back to the passage in Isaiah about the broken cisterns. We try to drink water out of broken cisterns that can't hold water because we don't think right. So how do we go about getting these needs met? Again, our brains don't always work right. There's a way that it appears to be right. But in the end, it leads to death. So let's think about what Dr. Crabb calls significance or impact. Does my life have impact in the world? What we tend to think is that significance is gained by exercising authority, power, and control. So the significant one is the CEO, the superstar, the president, the celebrity, the big cheese, the NFL quarterback, right? Power, authority, dominance, control, you know, great skill, great talent. That's the significant ones. But the kingdom is really different. Kingdom value says significance is gained through servanthood. The significant ones are the servants. John 13, it was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave the world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. So the evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. We know the story. He knew the Father had put all things under his power and that he would come from God and was returning to God. He had his identity already figured out. He knew who he was. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. And after that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. In Mark 9, Jesus with the disciples that came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked him, what were you arguing about on the road? But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Busted. Awkward. sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. He doesn't say don't pursue greatness. He says, I want you to adjust your strategy. He doesn't say don't pursue significance. He says, the way you pursue it may be different than what you've been thinking. Paul talks about the Lord's himself modeling this servanthood in Philippians 2. And he says, this is how we ought to relate to each other. In this relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Beautiful, lyrical, poetic expression of the submission and suffering of the Lord. But we dare not miss the point, which is in verse 5. This is our model. This is how we're to operate. I love in the scriptures, there's just a number of amazing stories, narratives about men and women who gained power and influence through servanthood. I've mentioned just a few of them here, Joseph, Daniel, David, and of course Jesus. Joseph, the Old Testament patriarch, he's one of my favorites. And he started out, you know, he had these dreams of being the ruler over even his brothers and his parents. And he got into some hot water for this, being very verbal about his dreams. And you know the story. He winds up getting sold into slavery by his own brothers. And I believe what happened is Joseph is making that long, miserable southwestern trek, you know, staring up the north end of a southbound camel on the way to Egypt. I believe the Lord began to speak to him and say, Joseph, your dreams and significance are real and they are valid. But you and I need to have a talk about how that's obtained. I don't build leaders the way the world builds leaders. I build leaders out of servants. And if you, Joseph, will invest your life in the blessing and prosperity and success of others, I'll build your dreams. That's not in the biblical narrative, but I firmly believe that that dialogue happened on the way down to Egypt because of what happens in the next 15 chapters of Genesis. Wherever he is, Potiphar's house, the prison, or the palace, his focus is, all right, what needs to be doing? What do I need to be doing? How can I serve? And he winds up prime minister of Egypt. Amazing story. And all these stories have that same kind of element. Those who sought to serve wound up finding their significance. Let's talk about security, because the kingdom's upside down. No, it's right side up. We're upside down about security. What we tend to think about security, being safe, is gained by playing it safe, taking no risks, and protecting our hearts. Consider Joey, the seventh grade kid at his first cotillion dance. There he stands on the corner of the gym and he sees Becky, the prettiest girl in class, across the gym, and he says, he screws up his courage and says, I'm going to go ask her. So he goes over, he says, Becky, you want to dance? She smiles at him. She says, not right now, Joey. I'm not ready to dance yet. But thanks for the offer. And he goes, oh, it's okay. And as he's turning to leave, Billy, big Billy, comes up to Becky and says, Becky, you want to dance? And she gives him a 1,000-watt smile and says, sure. Takes his hand and off they go to the center of the gym. So what's going on in Joey's heart? That hurt, didn't it? That hurt. So Joey's got a choice. Should I ask again? Or should I, or do I say, that hurt too bad. I'm going back to my corner of the gym. Say you're at the mall and you encounter a woman. She's got maybe a cast on one of her limbs. She's limping or she's in obvious pain. And you hear the Lord say, go pray for that lady. So you go, okay. So you go pray, you go up and you say, I can see you're in pain. Would you like me to pray for you? And suppose she says, I am an atheist. How dare you insult my intelligence by believing that my circumstances could be changed by prayer? Don't shove your religion down my throat. Not likely. That's not usually our experience. Most of the time our experience with asking people to pray is very positive. But it's possible, right? So what would go on in your heart then? Well, and more importantly, perhaps, what would the enemy of your soul say to you at that point? This is risky business. This is dangerous. You could get really hurt. You could get really insulted. You could really get your feelings hurt. You might want to try to avoid this kind of thing in the future, right? So I got a choice. Am I going to take the risk? Or am I going to protect my heart? Security. Take no risks. Look at Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. This is familiar stuff to us. We all know it by heart, whether we knew the address or not. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways submit to Him, and He'll make your path straight. If I read this right, if I want the Lord to direct my steps, I'm going to have to be willing to take some steps where I'm not really sure about the outcome. And they may not make sense to me, right? I may have to be willing to enter situations with uncertain outcomes. Let's look at this phrase again, trust in the Lord with all your heart. There's two possible interpretations to that little phrase. The first one, option one, which is probably the most common, which is the one that I've always kind of tended to think of. Trust in the Lord with all my heart means I trust God completely, implicitly, with reckless abandon, no reservations, no holding back. You know, I'm going for broke. I'm going to trust Him with all my heart. That's good. That's a good reading. Probably the most valid in a way. But what if we read it this way? Option two, I'm going to give up on the enterprise of always trying to protect my own heart from the pain of rejection or from the embarrassment of being misunderstood or for the shame of trying something and failing like little Bobby in the gym. And instead, I'm going to entrust my heart to the Lord and start taking some holy risks. I'm going to trust the Lord with my heart. I think He's able to protect it better than I am. Let's talk about intimacy. Take your pill, Cheryl. Let's talk about intimacy for a minute. Intimacy has a funny quality. The deeper the intimacy, the greater the risk of being hurt. Why? Because true intimacy involves vulnerability, exposing the deepest parts of myself. It's like I expose my heart to you. It's like I'm handing you bullets and hoping that you'll not put them in your revolver. I'm giving you, in a sense, I'm giving you some power in my life when I really am intimate with you, when I'm really vulnerable with you, right? So intimacy involves risk. The greater the intimacy, the greater the risk. True in marriage, true in friendships, true in all sorts of relationships. Suppose I do really get hurt in an intimate relationship. I get betrayed. I get abused. I get, you know, whatever. Now I've got options. I've got a choice to make. Option number one is what I call the Paul Simon approach. Back in 1965, the American folk rocker Paul Simon wrote this song, I Am a Rock. I think most of us probably remember it, right? I'm a rock, I'm an island. I touch no one, no one touches me. Shielded in my armor, and none can penetrate. A rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. That's number one. I'm going to go back to my corner in the gym, and nobody's going to hurt me. I'm going to protect my heart. Right? Ultimately, the choice, isn't it? It's between love and fear. Sometimes we conceptualize maybe the opposite of love is hatred, or the opposite of love is cold indifference. But the Apostle John, in his epistle, put love and fear in tension. There's no fear in love. A perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. So if I want to liberally paraphrase the apostle here, I'm saying I can be controlled or driven by fear. I can be controlled or driven by love, but I can't do both. Because fear focuses on what I stand to lose, and love focuses on what I have to give. So I can't do both. I'm going to do one or the other. So I got option one, I lean on my own understanding, I give in to my fear, I protect my heart, I build a fortress deep and mighty, that's safe. A rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. A great finger picking in that song. Option two, I don't lean on my own understanding. I entrust my heart first to the Lord, allowing Him to direct my steps, and then to others, taking that holy risk. Yes, I might get hurt again, but if I never ask for another dance, I'm going to stay stuck in the corner of the gym. In the right set up kingdom, significance and security wind up looking a lot like servanthood and vulnerability. Different than the way we normally think. So the Father invites us into kind of a right side up life, right into a life that involves some risks, involves some servanthood, involves some hard stuff. Of letting go, of protecting our hearts, and entrusting them first of all to Him, and then to other people.